Today, we're welcoming back our good friend Gary Dereshinsky as he talks about Hanukkah, right here on Messianic Perspectives. Shalom, and welcome to Messianic Perspectives, a daily program where we look into the scriptures from a distinctive first century Jewish point of view. This is Liz Aiello. I'll be back a little later with information about a special offer, so have your pencil and paper ready. Now, with today's study, here's Gary Dereshinsky.
Shalom, Chaverim, B'Shem Yeshua HaMashiach, or Ha'olam. Greetings, everyone, in the name of Jesus, the Messiah, the light of the world. It's great to be with you again, and last time I had a chance to speak with you about Hanukkah. We were basically reflecting on the winds of the storm that were blowing that led to the rise of Antiochus Epiphanes and the conflict that would unfold upon the scene of history and upon the land of Israel, bringing the Jewish people into great catastrophe as they faced the Greco-Syrian armies. Today, what I'd like to do is to share with you a bit about Antiochus Epiphanes and how he came to power. It was around 171 BC that Antiochus IV came to the Seleucid throne in Syria. He was a tyrant, he was cruel, he was harsh, and he was savage. And he believed himself to be God incarnate, so much so that he named himself Antiochus Theos Epiphanes, Antiochus the visible God, or just Antiochus Epiphanes as such. His detractors renamed him Antiochus Epimenes, Antiochus the madman, because of the way that he ruled in the land of Israel and the way that he mistreated the Jewish people. Last time I mentioned the rise of these three major empires, the Babylonians, the Persians, and the Greeks, and how Antiochus came out of that development. What I didn't bring to your attention is that that scenario was prophesied long ago by the prophet Daniel. Let me read you something that is written in the book of Daniel in chapter 8 that helps to set the stage for the events that are about to unfold. This is what Daniel writes in chapter 8. In the third year of King Belshazzar's reign, I, Daniel, had a vision after the one that had already appeared to me. In my vision, I saw myself in the citadel of Susa, in the province of Elam, and in the vision I was beside the Ulai Canal. I looked up, and there before me was a ram with two horns, standing beside the canal, and the horns were long. One of the horns was longer than the other, but grew up later. I watched the ram as he charged toward the west and the north and the south, and no animal could stand against him, and none could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased, and he became great. And as I was thinking about this, suddenly a goat with a prominent horn between his eyes came from the west, crossing the whole earth without touching the ground. He came toward the two-horned ram I had seen standing beside the canal and charged at him in great rage. I saw him attack the ram furiously, striking the ram and shattering the two horns. The ram was powerless to stand against him. The goat knocked him to the ground and trampled on him, and none could rescue the ram from his power. The goat became very great, but at the height of his power, his large horn was broken off, and in its place four prominent horns grew up toward the four winds of heaven. This is a rather startling vision that Daniel has. He sees a ram coming from the west with two horns, and one horn came up after the first. And the second horn that came up was larger than the first one. And then he saw a goat coming from the west to charge at this ram that had a notable horn between its eyes. Daniel is quite stirred by this vision, and so later he begins to inquire and to pray for an answer as to what this vision might mean. And God sent an angel, the angel Gabriel, to tell Daniel the meaning of this vision. And what the angel tells Daniel is that this ram with the two horns represented the Media-Persian Empire. You see this in chapter 8, verse 20. The two-horned ram that you saw represents the kings of Media and Persia. The shaggy goat, Gabriel tells Daniel, is the king of Greece. And the large horn between his eyes, we are told, is the first king, which would be Alexander the Great. And at the height of his power, when he tramples this ram and destroys the Medo-Persian Empire, he is broken off. That is to say that Alexander the Great will die at the height of his power as a young man. And rather than another horn coming up in its place, Daniel sees four horns replacing that one horn. And those four horns are four kings that will rise up after Alexander the Great and thereby divide up Alexander's army. The horn that is particularly important to us is referred to as the little horn later on in this chapter. But that horn is representative of the Seleucid Empire and later Antiochus Epiphanes, about whom we earlier spoke, the one who called himself the visible god, although he was really Antiochus Epimenes, Antiochus the man-man. What transpired was that on a given occasion, Antiochus, in an attempt to enlarge his empire, to gain more territory, and to unify all the different cultures that he was in control of, attacks the south. That is to say, he attacks the Egyptian entity of the Greek Empire, the Ptolemies. And when he attacks on a given occasion, he is met in the Sinai Peninsula by a Roman ambassador, a Roman messenger. Because at this point in time, the Roman Empire begins to rise on the scene of history. They have formed an alliance with the Ptolemaic entity of the Syrian Empire, and they want to protect their interest in the West. The Roman messenger met Antiochus, and he drew his sword, and he put a circle in the sand. He drew a circle in the sand around Antiochus Epiphanes. And he told Antiochus that he had until he moved out of that circle to make a decision as to whether or not he would wage war with the Ptolemies or whether he would retreat. What the Roman messenger was telling Antiochus Epiphanes was that the Romans now had an alliance, and that if Antiochus attacked the Egyptians, Rome would come on their side and defeat them. So this enraged Antiochus. He was forced to retreat and to return back to his land in Syria. And on his return, he decides to take out his retribution and his anger upon the Jews. He comes back into the land of Israel. He comes into the city of Jerusalem. And what he does is that he defiles and desecrates the temple. In fact, what we are told in the book of Maccabees, and by the way, the two major sources for information on this part of history are found in the book of Maccabees and by the Jewish historian Josephus. But in the book of Maccabees, we read that the books of the law, which they found, they tore into pieces and burned. And wherever a book of the covenant was found in anyone's possession, or if anyone respected the law, the decree of the king imposed the sentence of death upon him. Month after month, they dealt brutally with every Israelite who was found in the cities. In accordance with the decree, they put to death the women who had circumcised their children, hanging the newborn babies around their necks. And they also put to death their families as well as those who had circumcised them. Antiochus Epiphanes began to Hellenize the Jewish people. He forbid the obedience of the law. He forbid the practice of circumcision. He forbid the instruction of the Mosaic law. And when he went into the holy temple, he began to defile it. The golden altar, the candlesticks, and all the gold and silver utensils were looted from the temple and desecrated. And to show utter contempt for the Jewish people and for their God, Antiochus Epiphanes offered a pig on the altar to honor the Greek god Zeus. Further, he erected a statue of the Greek god Zeus in the very Holy of Holies and demanded that the Jewish people begin to worship this god than their true god. Antiochus then sent forth his army throughout the land of Israel, imposing these decrees upon the Jewish people. And when his armies would go from village to village, they would always call out the village elder, the village leader, and would require of them that they sacrifice a pig to the god Zeus, and thereby provide an example for everyone to follow. But on one occasion, these soldiers marched into a little village known as Modin, some 20 miles northwest of the city of Jerusalem. He called out the elder of that city, who was a man by the name of Mattathias. And he commanded him to come and to sacrifice a pig to the god Zeus. But Mattathias was a righteous man, and he forbid or refused to offer up this pig to this false god. But in the midst of the crowd, we're told in the book of Maccabees that a renegade Jew came forward and was willing to grab the knife and to slay this pig to the false god Zeus. But Mattathias would not allow him to fulfill his intentions. He grabbed the knife from the man, and then he killed this man. And then he and his five sons began to fight with these armed soldiers and defeated them and pushed them out of the city of Modin, and then began a seven-year revolt against the Greco-Syrian army. With the Maccabean rebellion, God's plan to protect and to defend his people begins to unfold. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the Maccabees and how God used them to restore his people. Until that time, Shalom b'shem Yeshua HaMashiach.
Thank you, Gary, and thank you, listening friends, for joining us today. It's always good to have you with us here on Messianic Perspectives. If you'd like your own copy of Gary's series on Hanukkah, or would like a copy for a friend, you'll be glad to know that it's available on CD for the suggested gift of just $6. Just visit our secure online store at messianicspecialties.com to place your order. If you would prefer to order by mail, just address your request to Messianic Perspectives, P.O. Box 345, San Antonio, Texas, 78292. To order by phone, use our toll-free order line from the U.S. The number is 1-800-926-5397. Even if you're one of our regular listeners, you still may not know that we're much more than just a radio program. Messianic Perspectives is sponsored by CJF Ministries, one of the largest missionary organizations in the world. We currently have missionary families serving the Lord all over the world, including the United States, Canada, South America, England, France, and of course, Israel. So when you write, consider helping us with a gift above the suggested amount. We'd be very grateful. By the way, listening friend, has it been a while since we've heard from you? It's very important that if you're listening, please let us know you're out there. You know, almost every time we drop a station from our network, we receive letters from people who say, "Why did you drop our station?" But then we check our files and find out they never bothered to write while we were on their station. So don't wait until it's too late. If you enjoy the program, let us know. You see, we don't want to drop a station if people are listening and we're having a ministry in their lives. But if no one is listening, we can take those funds and go on a station somewhere else. The only way we have of knowing whether or not you're listening is if you tell us. So we'll look forward to hearing from you. Just drop us a line at Messianic Perspectives, P.O. Box 345, San Antonio, Texas, 78292. Or email us at info@cjfm.org. And as always, when you're in touch with us, please mention the call letters of this station. If you're listening to our webcast or podcast, we need to know that too. I'm Liz Aiello. Join us next time, won't you, as Gary Darashinsky continues our series of studies on Hanukkah, right here on Messianic Perspectives. Messianic Perspectives is sponsored by CJF Ministries of San Antonio, Texas, and is made possible on this station by the free will contributions of our listeners in this area.